So you know, why is play such a big deal? I mean, why are we kicking this next six-week journey off with this whole idea of play? I mean, why do you have to be a good player or a good player in order to develop this kind of strength into your life? Well, I want to look at four reasons today. There's actually about 10, 12, probably more than that. We have time for four today. The first reason that we're kicking this journey off with play is because play replenishes our power. Now, justifiably, you know, our country right now is, we're really big into renewable energy. And you might say, well, what is renewable energy? Well, renewable energy is anything where there's an unending supply of that energy source. It might be something like the sun. It might be something like a river that's endlessly flowing. It might be something like the wind. It might be something like any kind of technology that when it's on, it's producing more energy than it's actually expending to produce that energy. And so this is what play does for us. Play has this ability, when you go to that place of play, to actually create more energy inside of you than you're actually expending. And so, you know, I don't know what it is for you. I don't know if it's climbing mountains. I don't know if it's, you know, riding motorcycles. I don't know what you do where you expend energy, but you actually get more back in return. One of the things we see is when you and I are immersed in a 3D environment where all of our senses are firing and you're doing things you normally wouldn't do, we get energized by that. I mean, it's things like taking an art class, things like rappelling, things like sitting down and, if you enjoy chess and playing chess with a friend, things like, you know, going on a bike ride, walking down the beach. Anything that's outside of the norm are these things where we find endless supplies of energy. In fact, there's an interesting institute. It's the Institute of Play, which is actually a real place, fascinating place. And here's what they say about play. They say, by nature, play is uniquely and intrinsically rewarding. It generates optimism. It seeks out novelty. It makes perseverance fun. It leads to mastery, gives the immune system a bounce, fosters empathy, and promotes a sense of belonging and community. Each of these play byproducts are indices of personal health, and their shortage predicts impending health problems and personal fragility. And so what this is saying right here is you and I, we live in an unimmersive environment, and we have to engage in three-dimensional environments. Consider it this way. You know, back, I don't know, generations ago, number five, six generations ago, 150, 200 years ago, most people living on the earth lived in what was known as an agrarian culture, which means that they were working in an agriculture industry. They were planting, they were harvesting, you know, they were fixing tractors and riding on tractors. Everything they did on a work front was a 3D experience. It was totally immersive. And then, you know, fast forward a few years and we came into the Industrial Revolution. The Industrial Revolution made a change in this. It was a little less immersive. And so people actually began to work in factories and they did this. They were kind of like, it was assembly line coming down in front of them. And so they moved from a full body experience. And maybe it was good in the sense that they're still standing, still physically doing something. But see, now 75% of us actually work in what's known as the knowledge industry. And here's what the knowledge industry does. You look something like this. And you might do this. And you might do this. And you might do this. But you see, this is very unimmersive. And the problem is we've gotten into this place, and maybe it's not a bad thing that our work environment is not immersive, but what happens is we translate this into our play environments, and you and I have very few experiences where we're actually immersed in three-dimensional experiences where our whole body, all of our senses are firing. And this is a bad thing. In fact, as a result of that, our brain begins to go awry. There's something called the cerebral cortex, which is kind of the center base of the brain. And this is the part of the brain that drives chemistry. This is the part of the brain that actually drives neuroconnections. And so when you're in a 3D environment, when you're immersed in play, your cerebral cortex is actually firing at a very high rate. I mean, there's synaptic connections being made. There's things happening. It produces creativity. And the result of that is you are energized. And as we're going to see in just a few minutes, you know, the more you engage in a three-dimensional environment, the more energized you get, the more creative you get, and you're actually better at what you do. And so when we play, it actually replenishes us. Second thing we see is that play actually puts us in our place. If we go all the way back to the Garden of Eden, back in Genesis, we see that God begins to order his creation. He begins to put things in place. There's 7 days of creation, and as we often talk, you know, there's people that get all hot and heavy about, you know, this is 7 literal days or 24-hour periods of time. Others say, no. These were long, epic movements. God was shaping and forming. You know, to be honest with you, I could care less which one you believe in. The point is that on day 6, God does something. He puts human beings onto the planet. He says, hey, I'm going to create someone, and I'm going to name Adam and Eve, and he puts human beings onto the planet, and they begin to live and move, and they begin to fulfill the purpose that God has created them for. And it's interesting because evolutionaries would actually say that people were created last in the process of everything coming to be in this world, which is really what the Genesis story says as well, right? And so we see on the 6th day, human beings are created. Adam and Eve are present. And it's kind of like God's like, all right, I just created you guys. The 1st day, day number 7, here's what you're going to do. Get ready? Adam and Eve, you ready? On your mark, get set, do nothing. And it's like all the build up, and then he just says, hey, on your very 1st day, I want you to spend it in just total unproductivity. I mean, it's like God says, hey, you know, I mean, this is God. God doesn't need a holiday. This is God who doesn't need a rest, and yet he models for us on the 7th day, the 1st day of the existence of human beings. He says, hey, I don't want you to do anything productive. I don't want you to do anything that really has a focus or a purpose to it. I want you just to enjoy. Now, this has profound ramifications for us, profound ramifications, because one of the things we see, and this is very important to me, is what God is saying right here is you are not designed to be an unending productivity machine. You are not designed to have a duty life that's always going. God is saying right here, I want you to be unproductive. I want you to start. Your first start of your rhythm is playing and just being purposeless in what you do. And this is profound for me. I mean, I think back, and there were seasons in my life where I look back and I see that, man, I was just missing a play element in my life. I was no fun to be around. I was not playful in my spirit or in my heart in any way, shape, or form. And one of the things I noticed as I look back on those seasons in my life was there was another through line in my life. And that other through line of my life was I was also getting a God complex. Whenever I lack play in my life, I have a tendency to get this God complex, this sense that I am God. That if I disconnect from my job, if I disconnect from my responsibilities here at Crosspoint, then things are going to fall apart. Everything's going to go awry. Everything's going to go wrong. And so I begin to say, you know, I can't play. I can't engage in this because if I do, the world will be going down and to the left. And I realize that when I begin to think this way, when play begins to become less and less in my life, I begin to not have a rightful place. And so one of the things that happens when I play is it's like I'm saying to God, God, I'm going to disconnect from my responsibilities for a moment, and I'm going to allow you to be you and take care of the world for a bit. You don't need Kurt right now. You're totally fine. And it's not that I don't have important responsibilities, but it's like God is saying, hey, when you do this, when you play, when you disengage, it actually puts us in our appropriate place. In fact, I'd even go as far to say is, you know, if you're somebody who has a hard time playing, think about this for a moment. I mean, think of your last week. I want you to just think in your mind. Can you identify 1 or 2 things that were totally frivolous and unproductive? Just think about this for a moment. Totally frivolous. If you have a hard time thinking of 1 or 2 things that were totally unproductive or frivolous, then I would say this: you're someone who probably has a relationship with God problem. You know, sometimes we think, oh, I always got to be engaged. No. If you can't think of pleasures you experienced in the last week, this is evidence that there's a relationship problem. You know, this is a fascinating thing. I mean, you know, God, as we look at creation, has this, it's like God's facilitating this ongoing pleasure in creation. Take a look at Genesis chapter 2 and verse 8 and following. The writer says, now the Lord God had planted in the garden in the east in Eden, and there was put the man he had formed. The Lord God made all kinds of trees grow out of the ground, trees that were pleasing to the eye and good for food. And so what do trees do right here? What do? It says they're not just good for the atmosphere. It's not just to make sure there's enough oxygen in the world. The trees are actually there to be pleasing to your eye so that you can enjoy them. I mean, God's saying, hey, I didn't just make trees to be functional, to fill the landscape. I actually created them for pleasure. I want you to see the forms, the colors. They have different shapes and sizes. Let me ask you, when's the last time you took a stroll out and just noticed the beautiful foliage outside? It's happening right now. When's the last time you went out and just noticed how many colors there actually are in the landscape of the trees? My kids notice it. Every time we're outside, they're pointing it out. When's the last time you noticed it? See, God says, hey, I gave you these changing landscapes. I gave you the mountains. I gave you the sunset that just melts into the horizon. I allowed you to walk on beaches white so that you can feel the waves lapping on your feet, and you can just be reminded that you need seasons of respite and times where you're just totally unproductive and purposeless. I mean, God's saying, hey, not only am I a scientific God, not only did I make this atmosphere to work in a unique way, but I'm an artist. I made it creative. I made it dynamic so that you could experience it for your pleasure. And look what else he says there. He says not only does he make trees for the pleasure of the eye, but he says they're good for food. You know, why do you think that you and I have one of the most extensive taste palates of any created being? Have you ever wondered that? I mean, why is it that when you and I bite into a strawberry or a piece of watermelon or a raspberry that just, you know, is tart and it makes your mouth like tighten up and that flavor just explodes in your mouth? I mean, why did God create it to be that way? Why did God give us five ways that stain our teeth and get all over our shirt? I mean, why did he do that? I mean, just because he wants you to enjoy pleasure. It's like God saying, hey, I just didn't make food to fill your stomach, but I want you to enjoy it. Elton Trueblood, a Christian author, he says something about this whole idea. He says, the person who is always available isn't worth much when he is available. See, the person that can't detach from whatever you've been given responsibility for, the person who can't detach, he says, you're not any good when you're working if you can't learn to detach. In fact, let's be honest, the person who can't detach isn't really very fun to be around, right? I mean, none of us like to be around somebody who's always producing, always engaged. And the reality is we actually begin to feel that our energy begins to go. We used to be able to play and receive energy, but now we're doing the same things in our work. We're doing the same activities. We're maybe putting the same energy into it, trying to put the same creativity into it, and yet we're not producing the results we used to. Why is that? It's the third reason. Because play stokes our passion. Play stokes our passion. This is a really weird thing right here. But you know, when I disconnect from the thing that I'm responsible for, when I disconnect from my role here at Crosspoint, when I go out and play and I don't think about how I'm going to start the next meeting that I'm in, when I disconnect there's something that takes place inside of me. One, it's putting me in my rightful place. It's reminding me that I'm not God and that this is God's church and life will go on if Kurt disengages. But it also, there's something about that that restores me and stokes my passion. I tell you what, when I come back from that disconnection, man, I am fired up. People will comment at times, man, you've been on vacation. There's an energy that I bring that I didn't have before. And this is interesting. You see, you actually come back more productive. Think about this. When did you have your last creative breakthrough in your job? I mean, was it sitting in your cubicle at work? Was it sitting looking at, you know, the sterile walls of your office? Was it sitting in another sales presentation or a collaboration day? I mean, those are all good things we have to do. When did it come? For me, it came this week when I was out on a jog. I mean, that's where my most creative moments happen. It happens this way all the time. In fact, Google came across this a few years ago. Did you know that Google actually allows 20% of their employees' paid work time to be spent on play projects? They say, hey, we're gonna engage you on our projects for 80% of your work week. For the other 20% of your time, you can, if there's something you want to do, something you want to create, something in the office that you want to play around with, for 20% of your day while you're paid, you can do this. And get this, some of their most creative innovations have been a result of this time. Ever heard of something called Google Earth? Google Earth, anybody ever used it? Yeah, you know, somebody said, hey, it'd be really cool. On my 20% of my free time, I'm going to mess around, see if I can develop an application that allows me to put an address in and shoop, see my house from a satellite view. Came as a result of that 20% of playtime. Gmail is another one. Something that came about where somebody said, hey, I've got a little time. I'm allowed to just be creative in this time. And Google says, hey, it may bounce back and benefit us. It may not. If it doesn't, just have fun with it. Some of Google's major innovations came as a result of their employees just simply playing on the job. They weren't the first to do this. 3M was actually the first organization to do this. 3M, a number of years ago, allowed 15% of their employees' paid work time to be used to just be creative, to do things. They say, hey, try something. You know, if there's something you've always wanted to do and you don't have free time, to take 15% of your work time. And if it benefits us in some way, great. If not, not a big deal. Have fun. Well, this is where Art Fry came across something. He developed something that I still use today. You know what it's called? It's called a post-it note. Anybody ever use a post-it note this week? Yeah. You know, you say, well, how did that happen? Art Fry, back in 1974, he was a part of his play and pleasure. He found play and pleasure going to church and singing hymns. I know, weird guy. I don't know why you'd want to do that. But he went to church, he sang hymns, and as a result of that, when he was singing hymns, he would put bookmarks in his hymnal, and every time he'd flip the pages, these bookmarks would fall out, and he got frustrated by that. So as a part of his work day, during his 15% time, one of his colleagues was working on this adhesive that would release from the paper without tearing the page. He said, I could put that thing on the back of a piece of paper, stick it in a book, and it wouldn't fall out, and voila, post-it notes are born. How many millions of dollars do you think 3M has made on post-it notes because of a creative breakthrough that happened while playing on the job? I mean, it's fascinating. Now, we don't do that here at Crosspoint. We don't really provide our employees a paid playtime, but it's a part of what we allow to be built into our lives. In fact, for me, I realize that some of the most creative times I have are not when I'm sitting in my cubicle, sitting in my office at home, sitting in the office across town. You know, some of my most creative times are when I'm out playing, when I'm engaging. And this is a really weird thing for me to say. But, you know, it doesn't happen in some of the five or six, you know, standing meetings I have every week. It doesn't happen when I'm meeting with people on appointments. As important as all of those things are, when I disconnect and get away from the thing I'm responsible for, that's where God really builds into me. And here's a fascinating thing. I would even say the discipline of play in my life right now is probably equally as important as my discipline of reading the Bible and praying. I know it sounds scandalous, doesn't it? Some of you are like, oh, I can't believe you just said that. Let me say it again. My rhythm of play in a week, during the course of a week, is just as important as my study time and reading the Bible. And here's the deal. I'm a pastor. I was thinking about this this past week. Actually, about a week and a half ago, we were looking through some photo albums and came across some pictures of a season in our life. And I just began to get overwhelmed with emotion. And as I looked at these pictures, I thought, man, this hits me right here. And there's something that just jumps off of this image. In fact, here's the image. Here's one of the images. This is our family at Disney World in 2007. And I had a lot of emotion when I saw this. And you're going, of course you did. I mean, it's Disney World. I mean, it's the greatest place on earth. How can you not have a lot of emotion at Disney? Well, no, it's not that kind of emotion. It was way more than that, way deeper than that. In fact, when I saw this image, I had so much emotion. I thought, you know, I thought this is a great example to share on a Sunday. But I don't know that I can do it. I don't know that I could get through it without tearing up, without choking up. I think I can do this. So what this reminded me of right here was wasted time. And you're like, well, why wasted time at Disney World? Well, here's the deal. See, up to this trip right here, this was back in November of 2007, and so Crosspoint was about 8 months old at this time. And so we had kicked off Sunday services back in February of 2007. We'd gone through a huge build as we kicked things off, got used to meeting on weekends. Our lives were crazy busy, and we'd actually been working on the project for about a year and a half. And over that year and a half, we had very few times of respite. I was young. I've matured a bit since then, but I was like 31, 32 years old at the time, and I'm thinking, man, I'm making my mark on the world. I'm starting this organization. I'm the leader of it. I've got to be having the right meetings with the right people, the right conversations all the time. There's no time for downtime. And so, you know, I would play with my kids in the evenings. I mean, I would, after dinner, I'd give them like sunset, you know, time. Basically, as the sun's going down, I'd say, well, I'll go out and, you know, kick the ball around for a half hour. But I wasn't really engaged. I was usually thinking about the 10 things I need to get done when I get done playing. And that was just kind of like, that's what a good dad does, right? I mean, kind of obligatory time, and I'm going to give them a little bit of my evening. And so, you know, we were spent. In fact, right before we went on this trip, Julie said to me, she said, Kurt, something is going to break if it doesn't change. And we had to take a hard look. In fact, what I began to realize was my family connections were breaking down. I was so engaged in my work, so engaged in building an organization, so engaged in having the right meetings, being on all the time, my relationship with my kids was nil. And so we got away, and it was a rough 2 or 3 days to start. This was a 10-day trip. It was a rough 2 or 3 days to start. By about day 4 or 5, I began to recapture what it meant to play. What it meant to engage and just have fun with my kids. What it meant for my kids to say, Dad, will you do this with me? Can you play this? Can you ride this? To see the smiles on their faces instead of always thinking about how I'm going to start the next thing. And if I can be blatantly honest, I believe this trip probably saved my marriage. Not that trip in and of itself, but it was the start to a new season in our lives. Is this what play does for us? I don't know what it is for you. I don't know if it's, you know, if it's playing, if it's riding bikes, I don't know what it is. You know, for me, people tell me at times, they're like, Kurt, you're getting better and better. You know, you're a better teacher than you used to be. You're a better leader than you used to be. I don't know if I am. I don't know if they're just telling me that to be nice and they want to encourage me. But here's what I know as I consider that. The only thing I can attribute that to is that I've learned to build play more and more into my life. I can be honest with you. I don't spend more time today than I did in front of the computer 5 years ago. I don't spend more time studying today. There are way more books on my list that I don't read than I do read because I have built more and more play and pleasure into my life today. It's the only thing I can attribute my creativity to, because when I do these things, it's like new ideas come. It's like my passion, my creativity is just stoked, and it helps me go to new places. And it's exciting. I come back with way more energy. I'm more excited right now than I've been in a long time. It's an exciting, exciting time. And so, there's things you can do. In fact, I want to give you a couple right now. There's one that I thought way back to. This is one we did back like when we were in high school and college. In fact, our family was eating over at IKEA yesterday in the cafeteria over in Cincinnati. And I tried to get my kids to do this. They wouldn't do it with me. They were walking away from the table. Like, Dad, we're not doing this. But you have to have everybody do this when you participate in this. But here's what you do. Like, when you're at lunch today, say to your table, get everybody in on a huddle on the table and say, hey, family, kids, friends, on the count of three, everybody's going to laugh as loud as they can. And everybody's going to go, why? And you're like, just trust me. Just do it. Just try it. Just on the count of three, we're going to laugh as loud as we can. In fact, we can do this right now. Just I'm going to show you what this looks like. All right, so we're going to do this. You're going to laugh. I'm going to count to three, and I want you to just laugh as loud as you can. And it's important. My kids, they were embarrassed. They're like, Dad, they're just like walking away, getting as far away as possible. So we couldn't do it because it takes everyone. So every one of us, are you guys ready? We're going to do this. All right, on the count of three, I want you to just blurt out a laugh as loud as you can. All right, you ready? And I know some of you who don't like play are thinking this is stupid, all right? And let me tell you, that's why people don't like to be around you, all right? So here we go. On the count of three, as loud as you can. Ready? One, two, three. Now look around. You guys are smiling. Look around you. There's all kinds of smiles. I tell you what, when you do this today at the restaurant, the place will come to a screeching halt. And then you will laugh for five more minutes. Your table will have all kinds of laugh. In college, we do it because it was cheap thrills. It didn't cost anything. It's all we could afford. All right, so there's a cheap one for you. You know, another thing we did this week, my kids came home Wednesday, and this has been a busy week preparing for a journey. And they're like, man, we want to have our friends over. Can we call these friends and have them come over? And I'm like, oh, guys, I'm going to sit on the patio and work and finish the stuff I need to get done. And I looked at the to-do list I had, and I thought, we're talking about play. And so I said, here's two or three things that aren't going to get done today. I'm going to put them off. There's always going to be more to do. Call your friends, bring them over. We had one of the best nights. 70-degree day, hour and a half of wiffle ball in the backyard, 10 or 12 friends. You know, it was fascinating as other parents began to come join the game. By the end, we had like 5-6 parents out there. Everybody's having fun playing. My kids talked about it all week long. Something very simple. I don't know what it is for you. I don't know if it's climbing a mountain. I don't know if it's walking down a beach. I don't know if it's, rappelling. I don't know if it's taking an art class. Whatever it is, you need to figure out what it is, because if you don't know what it is, I guarantee you something will break. Something will break in your life. Fourth reason. We play because it pleases God. It pleases God. I mean, think about this. When we play, we're actually participating in recreation. You know what recreation is? Recreation is when you recreate yourself. It's when you recreate. It's when you engage in play, you're actually recreating. God is replenishing and recreating you as a person. You know, it's been said that the family that prays together stays together. And I'm going to be honest with you, I'm not sure I believe that. It might be true in some cases, but I can assure you the family that plays together stays together. I've seen families, I've sat with families that do the obligatory prayer, we're going to run through the grace prayer at dinner. I don't think that keeps them together, to be honest with you. But the family that plays together stays together. The couple that plays together stays together. The kids and parents who play together stay together. Friends who play together stay together. Co-workers that play together stay together. When you play together, there's something that bonds you together. It creates a connection for you. Any healthy parent loves to see their kids just get down and get dirty and play in the sand. I mean, any healthy parent, when you were growing up, your parents a smile would come to their face when you would be out playing in the sand. I mean, and my mom's probably sitting in the back smiling because I'm down here, right? I mean, any healthy parent loves to see their kid playing. There was a season in our home where Macy, I think it was after her kindergarten year, she came home, it was the last day of school, and they brought all of their workbooks home. All the pages they didn't complete, they got to bring them home. And I don't know why they sent them home, but Macy is this real focused student kid in our family. And she came home for the first 3 days of summer, she just stayed inside and continued doing her workbooks. And Julie and I were like, man, that is weird. I'm sorry, you know when you realize your kids, you're doing something that's kind of weird and not healthy, we're like, that's not. Like, these are 80-degree, beautiful June days, and the other kids are out playing in the sand, and Macy's inside doing workbooks. It concerned us. You know why? Because any healthy parent loves, finds great pleasure when they see their children playing. Well, you know, not only do you have an earthly parent, earthly father and mother, but you have a heavenly father who finds great joy, when he just sees you playing and finding pleasure in life. Great joy. In fact, we read about it in Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is this book in the Old Testament. It's about a guy who's done everything. He's earned everything. He's accomplished everything. He's built everything. I mean, he's kind of talking about the vanity of vanities. He's had everything. I mean, anything money could buy, he's done it. Anything that could be accomplished, he's done that. And he comes to this place at the end of his life, and he just, he's kind of you know, mealy-mousing around. He's kind of like, you know, man, was it really worth it? I mean, all this stuff I've done, and I look over, and I'm like, did it really make a difference? Is my life really in any different place? And you know, what's fascinating about that is the last time I checked, the death rate's still hovering right around 100%, give or take a point or so. and in fact, last week, was it a week ago, week and a half ago, Steve Jobs died, unfortunately. I mean, talk about a guy who's been a blessing to our lives. Talk about a guy who's been a blessing to the ease of life for us. I mean, this guy was, I think, worth like $8 billion the last I heard. I mean, he had endless supplies of money. He had access to any technology, any of the breakthrough technologies that you and I aren't even going to see for years. I mean, he had access to all of this, and here's the deal. Even that could not stop the 100% fact that the death rate's still 100%. I mean, it's moments like that you step back and you're like, is what I'm doing right now worth it? Is what I'm doing right now contributing? Am I enjoying life? Am I finding purpose in life? And so we see this guy in Ecclesiastes, and he looks over everything he's done, and here's what he says. He says, "Seize life, eat bread with gusto, drink wine with a robust heart. Oh yes, God takes pleasure in your pleasure. Dress festively every morning. Don't skimp on the colors and scarves. Relish life with the spouse you love each and every day of your precarious life." He says, each day is God's gift. If all you get in exchange for the hard work of staying alive, make the most of each one. Whatever turns up, grab it and do it heartily. This is your last and only chance at it, for there's neither work to do nor thoughts to think in the company of the dead where you are most certainly headed. I mean, he's saying, hey, the death rate's still 100%. The question is, what are you doing right now? How are you enjoying life? If it's sipping wine on the back patio with your friends, you need to do it. If it's playing wiffle ball in the backyard with your kids this afternoon, you need to do it. He's saying, whatever pleases you and it creates joy and creates pleasure, you need to engage in that. Life is too short. You see, we see another guy in the scriptures, a guy by the name of David. And David was a strong warrior. I mean, David was every man's man. I mean, he was the manly among the men in every shape and form. David was a king, but he was also a shepherd boy when he actually overcame and beat this giant named Goliath. He was an amazing player. He was actually a player, unfortunately, as well. I mean, he had that in his history. But one of the things he does is he disconnects from what he's doing, and he finds joy and pleasure. A few of the ways he did that was he loved to write poetry. He loved to strum on his harp. And so we read about that in the scriptures. In fact, we actually have poetry that was written by David as an expression of his worship to God, of him saying, God, you know, I want to worship you. I want to take some joy and pleasure of just expressing my thoughts to you. In fact, here's what we read in Psalm 23. David writes, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake." And then he goes on to talk about how their banquet table's prepared for him, how God anoints his head with oil. I mean, all these lavish, lavish gifts. He says, hey, God, this is what you want me to experience. I mean, notice what he's saying there. He's saying, God makes me to lie down in green pastures. What do you do in a pasture? Nothing, right? Nothing. I mean, you lay down. And you look up at the clouds and you're just like, oh, I think I see an iPod. Or maybe it's a stallion. I don't know. I mean, it's like total waste of time, right? That's what David says. Go lay in a pasture. He says, hey, walk beside some still waters. Do a little fishing. You just walk along the babbling brook and see if it restores your soul. I mean, the only babbling you and I often hear is when the toilet plunger is like stuck in the toilet and it's perpetually running. That's as close to babbling brooks as we get. He says, when you do this, it restores my soul. Here's a heavy line. For his name's sake. For his name's sake. Let me tell you something. You know why most people in our culture are uninterested in God? Why most people around you are less interested in the person of Jesus? Because they see people who are up on God, and they think, man, if that's what it looks like to be up on God, I'm going to be down on God, because that looks of no fun to me. I mean, you know why people generally are not interested in living a godly life? It's because people who are trying to live a godly life, they're of no interest to anyone. I mean, God says, hey, David's saying, this is for God's namesake. His namesake is on the line right here. If you don't learn how to enjoy yourself, you're giving God a bad rap. He's saying, when you're unable to detach from your job, God's reputation actually takes a hit. When you look like you're not a joyful person, God's reputation takes a hit. When you're not creative in what you're doing and totally stoking and being energized by disconnecting, God's reputation takes a hit. He says, there's a problem out there. There's an outage because people see people who are up on God, and they're like, I don't want anything to do with that. So over these next 6 weeks, we're going to get strong. We're going to do some things. They're going to turbocharge this experience for you. And so I want to pray for that right now. So let's do that. God, I'm praying right now that you would help us to experience these things. I pray, God, that you would help us to experience the things that we just talked about. As we begin to look at play this week, I pray that this is not a pie in the sky thing. I pray that this is not just a dream that we hope to accomplish that we might get a glimpse of, but God, I'm going to ask that you would help play this week to take root in our lives so that we can experience this important discipline that grounds us, that helps us be us and not you, that replenishes us, that creates passion and energy in us. And I just pray that these things come about in your name. Amen. All right, so as we wrap this up, I want to do a couple things to kind of share with you the rhythm of how this journey is going to go. And so take out your bags, and inside you find a number of things. Take your journal out and this deck of cards right here. And, you know, there's a rhythm to this journey. And so being a part of the weekend experience is the first part of it. I mean, we're going to have some of the most powerful weekends that we do all year during the weekend services. So you've got an A+ so far. Way to go on being here today. Way to go on starting and kicking the journey off, right? The next thing you're going to do is you're going to take these deck of cards. You can go ahead and crack those open. And throughout each week, there are initiatives on these decks of cards that you are going to engage in. And so for this week, there are, I believe, 9 cards that have a blue word that says play on this side of them. You're going to scroll through these cards this week, and there are 9 initiatives. You're going to pick the initiatives you want to do, and they're going to take about 15 to 20 minutes each, and you're going to engage in playing in unique ways based on these initiatives, 5 of them. And then after you're done doing these things, you're actually going to record these in your journal. You're going to spend a little time, 5-10 minutes, just reflecting on what you experienced. Now, these are really important, and timing is important on these. If you're going to be in a home group, which we're going to talk about in just a moment, in a home team group, then you need to accomplish these initiatives before you go to your group, which means if you're in a group that meets Tuesday or Wednesday, then you need to be maybe doing 2 of these a day so that you've done a few of these before you get to your home group experience. We have a group starting tonight. We have a group on Monday night. Some of these groups are going to meet tonight and tomorrow night, but they're actually going to be talking about these things next week to give you a week to do that. So these cards are going to guide your personal experiences, and this is why it's called a strong challenge. You know, sometimes I know how the rhythm goes. If you've been a part of these, you say, man, I can come to the weekend services, and then I'm going to just kind of roll into my home team group, and I'm going to phone in my homework sitting in the driveway. I'm going to do it with the dome light on. I'm going to tell you what, you cannot do this during this journey. All right, you cannot do this. You have got to do the heavy lifting on this journey during the week. You've got to do these experiences if you want to grow. And then the next part is you're gonna journal on these things. You're going to write down your reflections, what you experienced, how you felt, what kind of energy this may have brought to you. All right, and then the third part of this experience is what's called our community groups or our home team groups. And so you've got to get into a home team group. There's not many times where we tell you to do something, but this is one of the few times a year where we'll say, you really need to do this. And it's because we care about you. It's not because we just want to tell you what to do. You know, I believe that one of the reasons that people grow is because they get in places where they're challenged to grow. It's like working out with somebody. If you have somebody you work out with, you do that because when you get together with that person, they encourage you. You might say, man, I can only run 2 miles a day. They say, hey, let's run a third one. And sometimes you don't even want to get out of bed and go work out. But if you know somebody's waiting on you, then you get out of bed and you and go through the discipline sometimes, even when you don't feel like it. That's what happens in our home team groups. And so we're going to basically give you a lab to get strong in. And I'm going to be honest with you. If you are not in a home team group, you are not going to grow in strength like everyone else is. And this is one of the things I love about Crosspoint. I love that Crosspoint's a get-her-done community. I love that we get her done even at the last minute. And what I mean by that is when I looked over the home team groups today, when I walked in here, there are still a number of spots left open in our groups this week. And what I also know is there are a number of you that have not yet signed up for a group. That's okay. You might be sitting there thinking, man, I am the loser person that's not signed up for a group yet. Well, let me tell you, there's a lot of other losers in the group, in the room, that have not done that either. All right, so you can sign up today, and you can jump into a group, and this is going to be a critical part of your growth during this experience. So here's how you do that. Before you leave today, there's tables in the back of the auditorium, and before you walk out the auditorium doors and get your kids, stop by the tables and see if there's a group that fits your schedule. We've got them all nights of the week and all locations throughout the community. So find a home team group. If for some reason you can't do that today, you can also go to our website at wearecrosspoint.com/strong, and there's a find a group link there, and you can look at the groups online and you can sign up. And so this is a really, really important part of it. One more thing. Inside your bag, you have a sticker. Go ahead and take your sticker out. It looks like this, says Say Strong on it. And this is a really cool part of this journey. You actually have 50,000 teammates on this journey that we're embarking on. And so these aren't just teammates here in Fishers. There are other churches in Fishers engaging in this journey. There are other churches in Indianapolis. There's churches in Cincinnati, in Atlanta, Georgia, all the way down in Florida, all the way up to Ontario, Canada. And so it's really cool that in real time, there are people all over the country that are going to be doing the same things you're doing right now. And we want to connect you to them. So take this sticker, even if it's like taping it in your car window. If you don't like to put stickers on your car, I hear that people that have bumper stickers on their car are worse drivers than people that don't. All right, it's just a statistic. So if you want to just tape it in your window, and that way you can see people in the community that are doing this challenge with you. It's going to be really, really cool as we go through these next 6 weeks. So let's stand, and we're going to sing some songs now as we get out of here. They're going to root us to this God. We're going to kind of root our identity in the strength of this God. God who wants us to find joy and pleasure. So we're going to declare ourselves, we're going to declare this rootedness right now, and hopefully these songs actually bring pleasure and joy to God as well. So let's sing.